हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौभुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 90. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes, though we see that harsh words affect everyone, please hear a story which will render harsh words useless. Excuse me. Sri Krishna continued, once a certain sannyasi was insulted in many ways by impious men. However, with determination, he remembered that he was suffering the fruit of his own previous karma. I will narrate to you the story that which he spoke. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments. Often those who give up the materialistic path and devote themselves to renunciation are attacked by impious persons. This analysis, however, is superficial, since the punishment is actually the culminative result of one's past karma. Some renunciates show lack of tolerance when presented with the remnants of their previous sins, and thus are forced to enter again into the path of impious life. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore instructs that one should become as tolerant as a tree. The neophyte on the path of devotional service to the Lord's pure devotees is attacked by envious persons. He must accept it as a consequence of his previous fruit of activities. One should be intelligent and avoid future unhappiness by rejecting the ethic of an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. One refuses to enter into enmity with envious men, they will automatically leave him alone, right? Because envious, there's a taste in that enviousness. And if you don't respond, then they get bored very quickly. Doesn't mean that they're not going to harass, but it just means they'll get bored and stop harassing. But if you engage, then it just continues it. And they'll always consider that you started it. They were just making their comment, and then you reacted. You know, heaven forbid. Right? So that's the whole point is that if you want to not be involved, you have to just not be involved. Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. There's no mundane way to step out of the material world. You just have to take up the spiritual consciousness and step out. Because the material world doesn't have facility to step out. Right? It only has material things. Does that make sense? Yeah. Sri Krishna continued, in the country of Avanti, there once lived a certain Brahmana who was very rich and gifted with all opulences, and who was engaged in the occupation of commerce. But he was a miserly person, lusty, greedy, and very prone to anger. In his home, devoid of religiosity and lawful sense gratification, means it was devoid of this. The family members and guests were never properly respected, even with words. He would not even allow sufficient gratification for his own body at the suitable times. Since he was so hard-hearted and miserly, his sons, in-laws, wife, daughters, and servants began to feel inimical towards him. Becoming disgusted, they would never treat him with affection. Right? So here's that Brahman goes into these things. They have a tendency to be renounced. He has all this lust, greed, and anger, but he applies it just into his business. So he's very miserly with his money. You know? So that's not proper. Right? It means money is there, it should be spent properly. What's supposed to be kept is kept, what's supposed to be spent is spent. Right? Yeah. In this way, the presiding deities of the five family sacrifices became angry at the Brahmana, who, being niggardly, guarded his wealth like a yaksha, who had no good destination either in this world or the next, and who was totally deprived of religiosity and sense enjoyment. Right, so he didn't get any benefit, he didn't get any enjoyment, so what's the point of having all this wealth? Mm-hmm. They're not even able to use it. O magnanimous Uddhava, by his neglect of these demigods, he depleted his stock of piety and all his wealth. Right, so he's so carefully keeping and being miserly, but because he's not being religious, he's not actually producing any more, right, that he has the piety for it. So at some point, it just runs out, whatever he had before. Because we say, it was very rich and gifted with all opulences, but because of lack of performing dharma, there was no more artha. So then all that artha that was there from previous dharma then disappears.
Right. It's interesting, he's still described as a brahmana. Like, with all this going on, like, we've had the discussion of how we...
But he's a brahmana. Brahmanas can do business. But it's not recommended. They should always stick to their own. But if others you can't, then that... But if you have too much... It's not that he's not doing these other things also, but it's just that the commerce was his main point. Mm. And so then the other things would be on the side. Maybe do a little bit of, you know, read a shloka of Gita or something. Who knows? But, you know, you know, those little miniature Gitas, you know. No, because in the Vedic, if it's just you're dealt with in that, you know, whatever that position. Yeah. The accumulation of his repeated exhaustive endeavors was totally lost. Some of the wealth of his so-called brahmana, it also says so-called, was taken away by his relatives. My dear Uddhava, some by thieves, some by the whims of providence, some by the effects of time, some by ordinary men, and some by government authorities. Right. So when the time's up, even though he has so much wealth, it just all disappears by all these methods. Right. Finally, when his property was completely lost, he who never engaged in religiosity or sense enjoyment became ignored by his family members. Thus he began to feel unbearable anxiety. Having lost all his wealth, he felt great pain and lamentation. His throat choked up with tears, and he meditated for a long time on his fortune. Then a powerful feeling of renunciation came over him. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes, after experiencing and thereby completing the effects of his offenses to others, an old impression arose within him, right? So that's the brahminical aspect. Having lost all wealth and feeling great pain, he became detached. You know, it's like Ajamil, he's a Brahmin, and then all this stuff, then he went back to that. The Brahmana spoke as follows. That's the advantage of the training. Yeah. You'll fall back on it. The Brahmana spoke as follows. Oh, what great misfortune. I have simply tormented myself uselessly, struggling so hard for money that was not even intended for religiosity or material enjoyment. Generally, the wealth of misers never allows them any happiness. In this life, it causes their self-torment, and when they die, it sends them to hell. Right? Because they worked so hard to get the money, but because they weren't religious, then that irreligious lifestyle, that will send them to hell, even though they gained so much money. But having that money, they don't enjoy religiosity, they don't enjoy sense enjoyment. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. Whatever pure fame is possessed by the famous, and whatever praiseworthy qualities are found in the virtuous, are destroyed by even a small amount of greed. Just as one's attractive physical beauty is ruined by a trace of white leprosy. In the earning, attainment, increase, protection, expense, loss, and enjoyment of wealth, all men experience great labor, fear, anxiety, and delusion. Theft, violence, speaking lies, duplicity, lust, anger, perplexity, pride, quarreling, enmity, faithlessness, envy, and the dangers caused by women, gambling, and intoxication are the 15 undesirable qualities that contaminate men because of greed for wealth. Right, so all these come up if there's greed for wealth. If there's no greed for wealth, then you're not bothered by these. Right? Yeah. Although these qualities are undesirable, then falsely ascribe value to them. One desiring to achieve the real benefit of life should therefore remain aloof from undesirable material wealth. Right? So desirable means it's engaged in the Lord's service. Undesirable means it's not. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Dangers arise from women gambling and drinking. Along with the four qualities from verse 17, there are 19 qualities. The four qualities, great labor, fear, anxiety, and delusion, give rise to suffering. The 15 qualities give rise to sin. They are the cause of the 15 anartas. Footnote 29. Vriti. Anarta literally means disaster, devastation. Mm. So we have the four qualities from the four, grading labor, fear, anxiety, and delusion, that's in getting it, and then that gives rise to the suffering. You know, these 15 kinds was to give rise to sin. The Brahmana continued, even a man's brothers, wife, parents, and friends united with him in love will immediately break off their affectionate relationships and become enemies over a single coin. For even a small amount of money, these relatives and friends become very agitated and their anger is inflamed. Acting as rivals, they quickly give up all sentiments of goodwill and will reject one at a moment's notice, even to the point of committing murder. Those who attain life, which is prayed for even by the those who attain human life, which is prayed for even by the demigods, and in that human birth become situated as first-class brahmanas, are extremely fortunate. They disregard this important opportunity. They are certainly killing their own self-interest and thus achieve a most unfortunate end. What mortal man, having achieved this human life, which is the very gateway to both heaven and liberation, would willingly become attached to the mode of worthlessness, to that abode of worthlessness, material piety? Abode of worthlessness, which is material piety.
Property.
The BBT purport states, that which one intends to use for one's personal sense gratification is called material property, whereas paraphernalia to be used in the Lord's loving service is understood to be spiritual. One should give up all one's material property by using it completely in the devotional service of the Lord. So that property that can be engaged, that's the one that's useful. And those properties that can't, then that's the ones that one doesn't engage. Yes.
Maharaj, we see practically that we don't have, among the devotees, we don't have a lot of differences on the philosophical level, let's say. But when dealing with money and position, we seem to be, facing the same problem as
theft, violence, speaking lies, duplicity, lust, anger, perplexity, pride, quarreling, enmity, false faithlessness, envy, and the dangers caused by women, gambling, and intoxication.
All there.
Yes.
So, how can we, deal with those kind of situations? We can avoid them completely, but it's not really possible in the society.
Yes, but the point is if you're Krishna conscious, then you're unaffected by them. Because these come up when one is trying to, when there's that lust for wealth, when you see it in the material context. Then all these will come up. If one's seeing in context of Krishna, then they won't come up. It may come up around you and others, but you don't have to be affected by it. It means you personally. Doesn't mean that their involvement in these don't have some effect, but that we understand what the story is going to be explaining is coming from previous, just the reactions of our previous karma. Like that. So even though they, being overwhelmed by this, may behave badly, then we try to be unaffected because of our absorption in Krishna consciousness. So we're not generating, but like you said, you're in a community, and so therefore then you'll be affected by other community members. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But it's not coming from you.
No, it's not coming from me, but still I'm suffering.
Yes, but the point is therefore we have to bring it into, like the advice it's giving here, how to bring that into a Krishna conscious environment. Because if you're Krishna conscious, then that may have some effect on others, and then they'll benefit. And if not, at least you'll get the benefit and go back to Godhead. And others can stay here and fight over the money.
Because we've seen that some people are very cool about money, like not really attached. And some psychologically attached. It's not that they don't have money. They have enough or even more than enough. But that
no, but if you have a scarcity mentality, it doesn't matter how much you have, it's never enough.
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen that. I knew two devotees. And one had a scarcity mentality, the other didn't. So even though the one with the scarcity mentality had more money, I think they were making, I think, $50,000 a month. The other one was only making 30. But the one with 50 felt the one with 30 had all the money and they have everything and they were trying to get more money and this and that. It was a real scene. You know, that's the whole thing. So it's just that that's the point. All the greed, all these things come up. And so because of that, even by a small amount of greed, and so then it all becomes ruined. So you just try to do your things very nicely, and then whatever effect is coming from these, then we understand that that's just the, you know, that comes because of previous karma, just the results of our previous activities. Does that make sense? But if we can, as much as possible, move with those people that don't have those problems, then that's better. Maybe it won't be as a broad and bustling a community, but, you know, better one good friend than a whole barn full of not-so-great ones. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah. Okay, the Brahmana continued. Oh no, we just said that. The BBT purport states, right, that which one intends to use for one's personal sense gratification is called material property. Whereas paraphernalia to be used, we read this also.
The Brahmana continued.
The Brahmana continued.
So it was.
We started it. One of them. Okay, we got it. One who fails to distribute his wealth to the proper shareholders, the demigods, sages, forefathers, and ordinary living entities, as well as his immediate relatives, in-laws, and own self, is maintaining his wealth simply like a yaksha and will fall down. Right? Why? Because the yaksha keeps money, but it's not his. That they guard it very well. Does that make sense? You know, probably better than Peter the Pumpkin Eater's wife.
Sounds interesting.
We don't know about Peter the Pumpkin Eater?
Different backgrounds.
Different some stars.
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
You can compare them to the Swiss banks. Swiss banks. Maybe they hired.
Swiss race. It means they were yakshas in the. They become yakshas.
Maybe they still are. Who knows?
Like that.
Maharaj, this means we have to give to all of them? I mean...
All of them? All of these guys? I mean, look at them all! What's it going on? Okay, I catch the own self. That what I get. Okay. And immediate relatives, okay.
Yeah, well.
But, you know, what's this in-laws, living entities, forefathers, say demigod? I mean, there's 33 a million of them. Come on.
Ordinary living entities.
Yeah, ordinary living entities. They don't even get a mention. They're ordinary, right?
Not just Vaishnava.
Means, this is, if one is in the grihastha lifestyle, these are who you are indebted to. It doesn't matter if you're following the Vedic culture, not following the Vedic culture, that's just the way it is. Right? Because the demigods, they're the ones that control everything. Right? Even moving your fingers so you can count your money, that's like demigods controlling that. Right? So you owe it to them.
Should we give to him too?
Yeah. And there's one for each finger. Right? He does. Oh my God. Okay, I'll just count with my thumb.
Get a machine. Yeah.
Get a machine. Yeah, then the electric guy, and then, you know, that fire, then Agni is there. And then, yeah, then the sages, because we get knowledge from them. the forefathers, that's why we're born in the family and then we can function. Ordinary living entities, because they come along, take away the trash and do all that kind of stuff. You know, as well as the immediate relatives, those are the ones that you call the family. Then the in-laws that, you know, you may or may not like to call family. And then one's own self. You see here, is he's so much, he doesn't even take care of himself. Like that. So all of these you owe. That's just, there's no question of not owing. Because that's just how it is. So when we talk about community society, we are in the middle of this. That's why it's working. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So now as devotees, then the demigod sages, forefathers, ordinary living entities and all that, that debt on that platform is taken care of because you're serving Krishna. He's not serving Krishna. Right? But it still doesn't mean that you are not taking care of your immediate relatives yourself, and then whatever is your dependent, you know, whatever is you owe, you have to take care of. You know, you got to feed the cat, you got to water the plant, you know, like that. Those things have to happen. But you can't just say, I'm a devotee, and then not use it for Krishna, not be giving in charity, and not doing those things. Because otherwise, it's, you know, that's the problem. So, yeah, you don't have to worry about all the demigods. That's a good thing. So I can use all fingers then, right?
Those guys are out.
Discriminating person are able to utilize their money, youth, and strength to achieve perfection. But I have feverishly squandered these in the useless endeavor for further wealth. Right? So he gets wealth and then he uses all his energy in that just to get more wealth. So he's not even using it. Now that I am an old man, what can I achieve? Why must an intelligent man suffer by his constant vain efforts to get wealth? Indeed, this whole world is most bewildered by someone's illusory potency.
Someone's,
yeah. Well, at least he's figured out it's not his, right? And for one who is in the grips of death, what is the use of wealth or those who offer it, sense gratification, or those who offer it, or for that matter, any type of fruit of activity, which simply causes one to again take birth in the material world? Okay, grips of death. What's the use of wealth of those who offer it, sense gratification of those who offer it, or any type of fruit of activity? The Brahman continued, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Hari, who contains within himself all the demigods, must be satisfied with me. Indeed, he has brought me to this suffering condition and forced me to experience detachment, which is the boat to carry me over this ocean of material life. Right? Because if you're not detached, how do you cross the ocean? Because you'll want to stay on this side. But with detachment, then you can cross to the other side. Right? So that he's become detached, then that's he's seeing that by Krishna's grace. Because otherwise, so many people, when they lose everything, they go crazy or make some new plan. Right? If there is any time remaining in my life, I will perform austerities and force my body to subsist on the bare necessities. Without further confusion, I shall pursue that which constitutes my entire self-interest in life, and I shall remain satisfied within the self. Thus, may the presiding demigods of these three worlds kindly show their mercy upon me. Indeed, Maharaj Katvanga was able to achieve the spiritual world in a single moment. So all these stories, everybody knows, they're using them. So we hear them, but they're just stories. Here you see he's applying it in his life. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Gaining intelligence, he becomes joyful. This is expressed in three verses. By the Lord's satisfaction, I have attained this condition. And by his satisfaction with me, I have become indifferent, which is a boat to cross samsara. Right? Because you can't get upset. It's not sour grapes. It's just you actually see what's the point. Right? That's the thing. So how much is useful, that's used. How much is not, not. Now, he's lost everything, so nothing's necessary. Right? Because his family, everybody's kicked him out, so, you know, then they can take care of themselves. Right? I will make the body withered because I have supplied it with so much enjoyment with great effort. I shall be attentive to the most beneficial goal, meditating on the lotus feet of the Lord. If my life ends in this matter, I will be satisfied. Right, so that's the whole point, is that when there's so much enjoyment from so much great effort, that's then in the vanaprastha, and that aspect, then you take it into a more extreme to balance it. Right, if one's led a very simple life, then the vanaprastha also becomes very simple. Right, because you're already on that simple, you just have to be more Krishna conscious. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Lord Sri Krishna continued, his mind thus determined, that most excellent Avanti Brahmana was, now he's become most excellent. Before it was, he's a Brahmin, then he's a so-called Brahmin, and now he's a most excellent Brahmin. Right? So you see it's all in the consciousness. So he's a Brahmin, he's engaged in commerce, but then he gets greedy and gets absorbed, he becomes a miser, and then everybody hates him and all that. And then now how he's acting, he's not really acting like a Brahmin. You say his inherent nature is.
Yeah.
So then when things then fall apart, then he takes back up that Brahminical nature, and now he's able to take advantage of that. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Lord Sri Krishna continued, his mind thus determined, that most excellent Avanti Brahmana was able to untie the knots of desire within his heart. Right? Because he did it through this intellectual process. That's what he was saying before. There's no need of something else. If you're situated on the path of Gyan, you don't need karma. Because just by the contemplation, you can actually affect it.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they have to contemplate it and then apply it practically. Right, and then from applying that knowledge within their karma or within their activities, then they get realization.
Mm-hmm.
But here they can contemplate just going through and then seeing, and then by that they can give up. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a matter of what's working. So that's what Krishna is saying before, is whatever you're qualified with, that's what you work with. So someone on this level, why would they do karma? They wouldn't. Right? But someone who's not on this level, why wouldn't they engage themselves? Right? Yeah. He then assumed the role of a peaceful and silent sannyasi mendicant. He wandered about the earth, keeping his intelligence, senses, and life air under control. To beg charity, he traveled alone to various cities and villages. He did not advertise his advanced spiritual position, and thus was not recognized by others. Right? It was just like Dhanvantari was moving around. Only Maharaj Yadu noticed. Like that. So it's just, you don't advertise.
Jatvarad.
Yeah, like that. You just don't advertise. O kind Uddhava, seeing him as an old, dirty beggar, rowdy persons would dishonor him with many insults. Some of these persons would take away his sannyasi rod, and some the water pot which he was using as a begging bowl. Some took his deerskin seat, some his chanting beads, and some would steal his torn, ragged clothing. Displaying these things before him, they would pretend to offer them back, but would then hide them again. Just harassing, right?
Gee, thanks.
When he was sitting on the bank of a river about to partake of the food that he had collected by his begging, such sinful rascals would come and pass urine on it, and they would dare to spit on his head. Although he had taken a vow of silence, they would try to make him speak. They just harass. That's the point, isn't it? They're just sinful people. Because it's about, you know, themselves and their, whatever it is that they're doing, that's right, and anybody who's different is not, right?
Could it be that they're also, I mean, from sinful people, they sometimes don't like it if someone is acting better than them, so they bring them down?
That's there. Because their position is the best.
Yeah.
So then anything above their position is artificial. And anything below their opinion is just, unfortunate, low class. you know, and those who are submissive to them, then they're kind to, and those who are not, then they're, you know. Yeah. Although he had taken a vow of silence, they would try to make him speak. And if he did not speak, they would beat him with sticks. Others would chastise him, saying, "This man is just a thief," right? Because he comes and begs. He's taking away our hard-earned, yeah, you know, leftovers. And, you know, it means you throw them out, because then it's you're in charge. But this guy's doing nothing, and he's coming and taking them, right? Yeah. And others would bind him up with rope, shouting, "Tie him up, tie him up." They would criticize and insult him, saying, "This man is just a hypocrite and a cheat. He makes a business of religion simply because he lost all his wealth, and his family threw him out." Some would ridicule him by saying, "Just see this greatly powerful sage. He is as steadfast as the Himalayan mountains. By practice of silence, he strives for his goal with great determination, just like a duck." Other persons would pass foul air upon him, and sometimes others would bind this twice-born Brahmin in chains and keep him captive like a pet animal. The Brahmana understood that all his suffering from other living beings, from the higher forces of nature, and from his own body was unavoidable, being allotted to him by providence. Even while being insulted by these low-class men who were trying to effect his downfall, he remained steady in his spiritual duties. Fixing his resolution in the mode of goodness, he began to chant the following song. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, "Determined in sattva is described as follows. Dritya yaya dharayate manaf pranendriya kriya yogena vyavicharinya driti sa parta sattviki." Determination by which one restrains the activities of the mind, life airs and senses, using unswerving concentration of mind, is in the mode of sattva. So life airs will mean the body, and the senses will mean the intelligence. So body, mind, and words. Mm-hmm. But the practical application of senses, life airs are one's activities and the mind itself, what it thinks of. The BBT purport states, "The Brahmana realized that his suffering was due to his false identification with his material body, and not at the interaction of his body with external phenomena. Rather than try to adjust his external situation, he tried to adjust his Krishna consciousness, and thus realized his actual identity as eternal spirit soul." Right? So if you identify, that's where the problem comes. But one's thinking, no, the body is interacting with the material energy, that's causing the problem. No, it's your attachment to the body, that's what causes the problem. So much sense? Because if you're not attached, why is the problem? Mm. Right? That's the principle.
I said the Brahmana, he's alone. He's like out of the family life and he's able to take this line of thought. For us, like, we have been given the spiritual duties to be done. So when there are obstacles by others, then what step we should take?
Okay, if you're alone, then you don't get bothered by him. But if you have these devotional duties, then you should be bothered by them.
Means you're supposed to exclude the order of spiritual master, preaching of
right
services. So in doing that, when other people are putting obstacles, then how we should behave? Here he is just indifferent to it. He's focusing on being Krishna conscious.
And you're supposed to make going others out following the order of guru and not trying to be Krishna conscious.
Sorry.
trying to not be Krishna conscious.
Yes.
This one thing is individual Krishna conscious, another to help others. We want others to know. But then obstacles are being put to.
But they're put to you, not to the others.
Both.
Just want to make sure. Okay, so you worry about the ones to others.
If you are putting two obstacles, you put obstacles to others.
No, you worry about those. Yeah, I mean, oh yeah, so I can put them. So all the ones that come to you, just give them to the others. Right? Just get passed it on. Yeah. So we can give. I mean, they give to us, we can give it to others. You mean like the eternal principle is the guy has a tough time at work, he comes home and upsets his wife, she gets on the daughter, she gets on the little boy, he goes and kicks the cat.
I thought finally we found the confirmation.
Yes. See, don't ask a question you're not willing to hear the answer to. Okay? Otherwise, what's the point of asking the question? So in other words, we're only hearing, those things that were, make sense to us. And what's different from what we do than it's, what? Does that make sense? The point is, do you want to advance in spiritual life or not? So, you try to do your service, and you do your service despite whatever goes on. You absorb yourself in Krishna. Right? And so if your duties are adjusting things so that things go nicely in the preaching, you adjust. But that doesn't mean that people don't make trouble. Okay? Right? So that's the whole point, is that it's false identification with this material body. That's what causes the problem. You don't have that, it doesn't bother you. It's just something you have to take care of. Does that make sense? Verses 42 to 61. The Bhikshu Gita. The Brahmana said, "These people are not the cause of my happiness and distress. Neither are the demigods, my own body, the planets, my past work, or time. Rather, it is the mind alone that causes happiness and distress and perpetuates the rotation of material life. The powerful mind actuates the functions of the material modes, from which evolve the different kinds of material activities in the modes of goodness, ignorance, and passion. From the activities in each of these modes develop the corresponding statuses of life." Right, so we're going to say, oh, it's my past work, it's time, it's the planets, the demi, all these different things. Adiyatmika, adidaivika, adibhautika. It's not, it's the mind. If the mind is absorbed in Krishna, then it doesn't get bothered by these things. Right? They're just things that come up. Does that make sense? It's just like, let's take two scenarios. Okay, let us say after dinner, right? There's dishes. You just wash the dishes. And then the dishes are washed, and then you go about whatever else you're going to do. Okay? Now, let's say, in the typical cliche, you tell the teenager in the house to wash the dishes. What's going to happen?
Nothing.
Well, that's there. But are they just going to not react? Or there's going to be this whole thing and ruining their life and this and that and stuff? Just a total drama queen kind of thing. Right? Does that make sense? And so, the suffering that they're going through, who's creating that? What's creating it? Their mind. All they have to do is wash the dishes. They'll be done in 10 minutes. I've actually literally seen kids try to avoid the work for that they have free time. And there's something they didn't finish. And it has literally 5 minutes to do it. Like they didn't put their broom away or pick up the pile or something like that. And they will argue and this and go mental and all kinds of things until the hour is up and their free time's over. And not do that when they could have just done it and gone and played for 55 minutes. It's the mind. We take it that it's the karma, it's this and that. Yes, you can say that's the direct mechanical, but why is all that put into motion? Because of the mind, and the mind therefore actuates the functions and the modes of nature. So if the mind is on Krishna, there's no modes. So therefore it doesn't affect you. Not that things aren't going on, But it doesn't affect. It doesn't mean that when you become, you know, how you say, on this liberated platform like the Avanti Brahman, that the dishes after dinner go away.
No dishes.
Yeah, that's it. You just leave them there. And then the next day, if they're still there, then you go sit in the living room and do whatever you want to do. And then when everyone asks, you know, what happened to dinner, it says, no dishes, no dinner. Okay. Didn't you see it's Article 7 on House Rules? I saw what one thing it said. House Rules, rule number one, listen to your mother. Rule number two, you know, strictly follow rule number one.
Adult versus circumstances.
Yes, but the point is the circumstance of the dishes aren't washed, so therefore no dinner. No? Yeah. So the point is this, obstacles don't go away. Right? That's our concept of religion. I do pious things. Pious things means only good happens to me. No obstacles come up. So then it's a disturbance. Why are these obstacles coming? I'm a devotee. I'm chanting. Why haven't they gone away? No, it means that we don't identify with the mind, the body, and all these things. And therefore, even though they're there, it doesn't bother us. Because bothering us is the problem, not whether they're there or not. So yeah. Yes, no, very good, kind of, maybe. It's so you know. I mean, he took advantage of this knowledge, you know, quite a few years later. But he knew it. So then when push came to shove, he knew, okay, this is what you do. Right? Just like that. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes, verse 43 explains how the jiva wanders. The mind creates good qualities in objects like women and gold, though they are full of bad qualities. How can I practice dharma without money? How can I obtain enjoyment of garlands, sandalwood, and women? How can I be happy without them? Therefore, I must earn money. Though there are faults in earning money, the mind makes the person perform the activities. The mind is strong. It does not accept the discrimination of others or oneself, which concludes that wealth and family create great obstacles. The actions instigated by the mind are of great variety in sattva, tamas, or rajas, not of one type. Those in sattva lead to dharma. Those in tamas lead to hell. Those in rajas lead to dharma and adharma. Gradually, these produce bodies of devatas, animals, and men. Right? So all that what the mind is absorbed, that's what's creating everything. So it's all about the mind. Right? So then that whole point is if the... What was the thing here? Fatigya. By fixing the intelligence on the Lord, once you completely control the mind, this is the essence of science of yoga. So if that's done, then yoga goes very nicely. Right? And so then you can apply this. He's applying it in his situation, you know, at the end of life, in sannyas. But the same knowledge can be applied. He's telling it to Uddhava, you know, who's going to be applying it earlier in his life. Right? Does that make sense? The Brahmana continued, although present along with the struggling mind within the material body, the supersoul is not endeavoring, because he is already endowed with transcendental enlightenment. Acting as my friend, he simply witnesses from his transcendental position. I, the infinitesimal spirit soul, on the other hand, have embraced this mind, which is the mirror reflecting the image of the material world. Thus I have become engaged in enjoying objects of desire, and am entangled due to contact with the modes of nature. Right, so the mind is reflecting whatever, you know, looks interesting. And then we commit ourselves to that. Right? So then if we are careful about that, control with intelligence, then the mind only engages in those things that are going to be beneficial. Otherwise, the mind, you know, has all kinds of stuff to do. Thus I have become engaged in enjoying objects of desire and am entangled due to contact with the modes of nature. Charity, prescribed duties, observance of major and minor regulative principles, hearing from scripture, pious works, and purifying vows all have as their final aim the subduing of the mind. Indeed, concentration of the mind on the Supreme is the highest yoga. If one's mind is perfectly fixed and pacified, then tell me what need does one have to perform ritualistic charity and other pious rituals? Right? Because all those are to bring about a fixed mind on the Lord. If you have that, then all these other activities aren't necessary. Right? So it's just those activities that are just the natural lifestyle of the devotee, as we saw was given in the previous chapters. And if one's mind remains uncontrolled, lost in ignorance, then of what use are these engagements for him, right? So if you're absorbed in the material nature, even you have these pious activities, you can't take advantage. And for someone who's transcendental, the effect of these pious activities is already achieved. All the senses have been under the control of the mind since time immemorial, and the mind himself never comes under the sway of any other. He is stronger than the strongest, and his godlike power is fearsome. Therefore, anyone who can bring the mind under control becomes the master of all the senses, because all of them are under the control of the... Like that. Huh? No? Too much?
It's a bit intense.
Okay, well, see you later.
I thought it became self-realized.
Oh, self-realized. Okay, yeah, yeah. So now he's going out to...
Going back to Godhead.
Okay. That'll also work, right? Failing to conquer this irrepressible enemy, the mind, whose urges are intolerable and who torments the heart. Many people are completely bewildered and create useless quarrel with others. Thus, they conclude that other people are either their friends, their enemies, or parties indifferent to them. Persons who identify with this body, which is simply the product of the material mind, are blinded in their intelligence, thinking in terms of I and mine, because of their illusion of, quote, this is I, but that is someone else, end quote. They wander in endless darkness. So because they're not controlling the mind takes them on all this, and then by their position, by the modes, then they'll argue and quarrel with everybody else, and then, you know, this one's my friend, this is my enemy, this one, these ones are neutral, like that. Having stated that the mind is the cause of happiness and distress, now six things previously mentioned in verse 42, other people, demigods, one's own body, the planets, one's past work and time, which are not causes, are explained in six verses. Right? So now he's going to go through those, because he was saying that these are the cause, right, of it. But now he's going to explain. The Brahmana continued, if you say that these people are the cause of my happiness and distress, then where is the place of the soul in such a conception? This happiness and distress pertain not to the soul, but to the interactions of material bodies. If someone bites his tongue with his own teeth, at whom can he become angry in his suffering? Right? Because people cause this. Who's the people? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. If one person gives happiness or suffering to another person, in that theory, where is the jiva? The jiva has no place at all because the cause of happiness and suffering and the experience of happiness and suffering are two bodies, transformations of earth, not the jiva. It is illogical to assume some vague cause different from the body as the cause, for instance, devatas of the senses, or for causing or experiencing pain. This is false logic. Because the jiva is not there, so how is the jiva? It's the interaction of the body, so that can't be giving the soul satisfaction, right? Is the jiva aware of the suffering? When the jiva experiences suffering, who should be his object of anger? Should he become angry at the teeth or at the tongue? Just as one should not become angry with the teeth, the cause of pain, or the tongue, the experiencer of the pain, one should not become angry at others who are suffering or at oneself, the sufferer. One should tolerate suffering, which arises from jiva's identity with the mind. Right? So this is something that we experience. You bite your tongue, and then you don't become angry at your teeth or your tongue. So it's the same principle. It's just it happens, and that's just the way it is. So same way is that the body is there, other bodies interact, so they're not the cause. One should not become angry at others who cause suffering or at oneself, the sufferer. One should tolerate suffering, which arises from jiva's identity with the mind. One should attribute fault to nothing except the mind. This should be understood in the following verses also. Brahmana continued, if you say that the demigods who rule the bodily senses cause suffering, still, how can such suffering apply to the spirit soul? This acting and being acted upon are merely interactions of the changeable senses and their presiding deities. When one limb of the body attacks another, with whom can the person in that body be angry? If the soul himself were the cause of happiness and distress, then we could not blame others, since happiness and distress would be simply the nature of the soul. According to this theory, nothing except the soul actually exists. If we were to perceive something beside the soul, that would be illusion. Therefore, since happiness and stress do not actually exist in this concept, why become angry at oneself or others? And if we examine the hypothesis that the planets are the immediate cause of suffering and happiness, then also, where is the relationship with the soul who is eternal? After all, the effect of the planets applies only to things that have taken birth, right? Not to the soul. Expert astrologers have moreover, explain how the planets are only causing pain to each other. Therefore, since the living entity is distinct from these planets and from the material body, against whom shall he vent his anger? Right, so do we cover all those? Okay. Other people, demigods, one's own body, the planets, one's past work of time. Okay, so we've gotten up to the planets. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, if you claim that planets are the cause of suffering, what role has the unborn jiva in this? The planets relate to bodies which are born, right? Because karma goes with the body that's born. Depending on the ascendant at birth, the planets situated in the 12 zodiac signs become causes of suffering by placement in the 8th house, for instance. The astrologers also say that the planets in the sky afflict each other by various aspects, and this is the cause of suffering. They do not afflict the person. The affliction from the planets arises from the jiva's identity with the body, right? That's what he said before. By identifying with the attachments, then all this comes up, which is born on the ascendant. With whom should the jiva, different from the body and the planets, become angry? The Brahmana continued.
Ascendant? What is ascendant?
Ascendant means that at the time of when the sun comes up, right? At that moment, whatever the planets are at that point, that's the ascendant.
Okay.
So, yeah, and so then that then fixes that. That becomes the first house, and then from there you count, because it could be anywhere. So wherever it happens to be, whatever zodiac sign is that, then that's considered the The Brahmana continued, if we assume that fruit of work is the cause of happiness and distress, we are still not dealing with the soul. You're also going, oh, okay. Wow.
Tough crowd.
Oh, you found someone to be angry with. Okay. That's the question here. At whom do we become angry?
Eureka moment.
The idea of material work arises when there is a spiritual actor who is conscious and a material body that undergoes the transformation of happiness and distress as a reaction to such work. Since the body has no life, it cannot be the actual recipient of happiness and distress. Right, so that's what before. It can't be the body, because body is just dead matter, like that. Nor can the soul, who is ultimately completely spiritual and aloof from the material body. So the body can't be, because it's dead matter. The soul can't be, because it's aloof from the body. Since karma thus has no ultimate basis in either the body or the soul, at whom should one become angry? Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Let karma be the cause of suffering and happiness. This statement is made in a critical mood. There is no karma. How can karma be the cause? That is explained in this verse. Karma could only exist as the soul cause if it were matter and spirit existing as one entity, with material unconscious part undergoing change while the conscious portion searched for its place of residence. But such a combination is not possible. The body is unconscious, and the jiva is conscious, suparna. And there can be no combination of the pure conscious entity and matter made of ignorance into one entity called karma. Therefore, at whom should one become angry, since he, karma, is not the cause of happiness and suffering? The Brahmana continued, if we accept time as the cause of happiness and distress, that experience still cannot apply to the spirit soul. Since time is a manifestation of the Lord's spiritual potency, and the living entities are also expansions of the Lord's spiritual potency manifesting through time. Certainly a fire does not burn its own flames or sparks, nor does the cold harm its own snowflakes or hail. In fact, the spirit soul is transcendental and beyond the experience of material happiness and distress. At whom, therefore, should one become angry? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, if time is the cause of suffering, what is the role of the jiva? Jiva is non-different from time. Since the jiva is an amsa, Brahman, and time and Brahman are one, the source of the amsa should not afflict the amsa. An example is given. Fire does not harm its sparks, and cold does not harm snowflakes. Therefore, at whom should one become angry? There is no duality of happiness and suffering for the jiva, who is beyond maya, by his surup, parasya. Thus the six proposed causes of happiness and distress have been rejected. The Brahmana continued. The false ego gives shape to illusory material existence and thus experiences material happiness and distress. The spirit soul, however, is transcendental to material nature. He can never actually be affected by material happiness and distress in any place, under any circumstance, or by the agency of any person. A person who understands this has nothing whatsoever to fear from the material creation. Right? Because it can't affect the soul, can't affect your consciousness. If that's appreciated, then one can be Krishna conscious. The jiva is by nature pure. Time and karma are not causes for its suffering. The identification with the body because of ahankara by ignorance is the cause. The body is dominated by the mind. Mind then is the cause. Mind is the cause of suffering. This is the meaning of this section. With the imposition of the body, the jiva's pure nature disappears. By that imposition, the six causes of suffering arise according to two circumstances. This is the distilled conclusion. Right? These six causes are according to circumstances.
Did we miss a paragraph at the bottom?
Did we miss a paragraph?
Did someone raise any other cause of happiness and suffering? Did we do that?
We have missed it.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, we just went straight to the jiva is pure by nature.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. If someone raises any other cause of happiness and suffering, it is not possible by the power of objects. Duality cannot influence the jiva, which is beyond maya, since it is different from it. So, quote, what is the cause of the experience of suffering that we see? End quote. It is the imposition of the mind, which was previously explained. It arises from only yata, the ahankara. Right? So, because of false ego, then the position of the mind comes up. Mm-hmm. When we identify as servant of Krishna, then the mind can't take control. Does that make sense? Because if we're servant of Krishna, then you have to choose according to what's favorable for that and what's not. But if we don't, by false ego, then the mind will choose according to that false identity. The quality of ahankara is to define bondage in samsara. Okay, so now we know what ahankara is. It defines bondage in samsara. He who becomes enlightened does not fear, though covered with matter. So that's the thing, is that matter is still there, but it doesn't affect. Because it's false identity that causes. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. The jiva is by nature pure. Time and karma are not causes for its suffering. The identification with the body because of ahankara by ignorance is the cause, right? Because that will then create, then the mind will act on that ahankara. The body is dominated by the mind. Mind then is the cause. Mind is the cause of suffering. Right? This is the meaning of the section. With the imposition of the body, the jiva's pure nature disappears, right? This body comes by the false identity that is then given by the arranged means by the mind's meditation upon that false identity. Yeah? By that imposition, the six causes of suffering arise according to circumstance, right? Because they're only the environment around you, right? Because you, a false ego, you identify, then therefore the mind identifies with what the particular body and what you're doing, that gives rise to these six causes of suffering around that are connected to the body. Mm-hmm. And because of, we're identifying with it, that's why we suffer. You stop identifying with it, you don't suffer. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's Maharaj Chaitanya says, identify as servant of the servant.
Yes, yes. If you do that, then this whole problem goes. So it's not that we don't know these. This is just very technical explanations of what we already heard. Right? It's not that it's new information. It's just further detail of principles that we already know. So that means right from the beginning, someone already has the knowledge by which to perfect himself. Right, and so then this all this gives further and further detail how to apply that those fundamentals. Right? Yes.
Why here the more emphasis is given on the mind rather than on the ahankara?
Because the mind is the one that's going to make the decisions based on the ahankara. So by the ahankara that creates the mind. Right? Get rid of ahankara, that changes the nature of the mind. Right? Because the mind accepts and rejects, so it accepts and rejects based on what the false ego is. Change the identity to servant of Krishna, then it has to make decisions based on that. But as long as you maintain something other than I'm servant, it will make decisions in those areas. Where you identify as servant, it will decide there. You know? Does that make sense? You know, if you identify as servant, then you go, okay, should I sit here in the temple and chant japa, or should I go out and get pizza? Right, maha pizza. Then you look at your watch, oh, the shop's not open for 15 minutes, I should sit here and chant. Right, so like that, when you identify as a devotee, it makes all kinds of good decisions.
Only good options.
Yes, yes. Right. The Brahmin continued. Yes. I shall cross over the insurmountable ocean of nescience by being firmly fixed in the service of the lotus feet of Krishna. This was approved by the previous acharyas who are fixed in firm devotion to the Lord, Paramatma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Footnote 30. This verse was recited by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu after he accepted sannyas. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 3.6. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates.
So from being so-called Brahmana, then he became an exalted Brahmana, and then he recited this verse that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recited.
Yes. So, and you see Krishna is quoting the person. So.
And then when he
that's the whole. That's the advantage of training. So you're properly trained. even if you get distracted, then you can come back. Like Ajamiya was properly trained, then he was able to come back. You know, he just had a bit of a detour in between. You know, that, you know, 68 years, 70 years of detour, right? But, you know, he came.
Who's counting?
Huh?
Who's counting?
Yeah, who's counting? You know, so that's the whole point, is that proper training, then you have something to come back to. That's why he's a Brahmin, because he was trained in that way and he practiced in that way. He got deviated, right? But then he came back. So that's why you see, went through a Brahmin, so-called Brahmin, to, what was it?
Excellent
Brahmin.
Right.
Exalted Brahmin. Right? So it's just a matter of the consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes the difference.
And it is the association what we take.
Yes, yes.
Proper association to elevate us.
Yes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, pure bhakti, previously existing, but stopped by obstacles, appeared in his mind. Right? So it was there before. Since that has appeared, he rejects thoughts of renunciation and methods of tolerating the dualities. Submerging himself in the sweet ocean of service to the Lord's lotus feet, he dances with great boldness. Fixed in the sarupa of the jiva, which is purified of its identification with the body, and slightly fixed in Paramatma, I will cross over samsara by service alone. Eva, why do you fix yourself on Paramatma? I will do what was established by the ancient predecessors.
What did I do? So why Paramatma? Here is the question: why do you fix yourself on Paramatma?
He says that's what the ancient predecessors do.
But they also fix on Krishna.
But Krishna is Paramatma.
And then one slightly.
That you see that aspect of he's Paramatma, and he's controlling all the different things and all that. And so then, like before, seeing that all things are in Krishna, Krishna is everything, he's doing that as Paramatma. Mm. Or he's doing that as Brahman. So there'll be an understanding of that for the purpose of being able to cross over the material ocean. And then you cross over, then you see he's absorbing him in the sweet service, ocean of service to the Lord's lotus feet.
Brahma Samhita also Premanjana Charita Bhakti Lochana. Santa Sadaiva Hridayeshu Vilokana. That Shama Sundara form he's telling the pure devotee.
Yeah. So then, that's slightly fixed.
Can we say that he just transpassed all the passes and went directly to devotional service? Like he was engaged.
Or it can be that there's a mistake in the translation, because in the original verse it's firmly fixed.
It's fixed, and it's also the Supreme Personality of God.
Because you have, means if you take the both together, Lord Chaitanya, what he spoke. Means I shall cross over the insurmountable ocean of nescience by being firmly fixed in the devotional service, the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. This process was approved by the previous acharyas who were fixed in firm devotion to the Lord, Paramatma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he sees that it's just a matter of, you know, the translation.
Sanskrit words comes from Mukunda. Sanskrit words comes from Mukunda. So it's Tamo Mukunda Angri Mishvedi.
Yeah. Well, that's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because the point is, it's Krishna that's doing all this. So it's a matter of how you're dealing with the world, then you're looking on that level, but then you're absorbing in Krishna. Okay. Lord Krishna says, thus becoming detached upon the loss of his property, the sage gave up his moroseness. He left home, taking sannyas. So all this happened, he was meditating before.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so then, having that, then he was able to fix himself. Yes.
Another aspect of calling Paramatma is because the Satkaryavad seeing back the cause as
right.
Paramatma.
Right.
Who is the cause behind it?
Everything.
Everything.
Yeah. But then also, if you take the same thing, it's then there's Krishna.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. It's just a matter of your realization, the way it goes. But the main thing is firmly fixed. So I'm not sure why it here says slightly fixed. Unless he's meaning slightly, meaning that it's on Krishna.
That's what I thought. Slightly on Brahma.
But it also can mean that the person translating doesn't know what he's talking about. That also comes up. Because this is 11th canto. And you do have the element that there's a limitation to how much Moni or Williams can help you.
Yes.
Well, but in either case, that's the fun part. We can explain it either way. He left home, taking sannyas, and began to travel about the earth. Even when insulted by foolish rascals, he remained unswerved from his duty and chanted this song. No other force besides his own mental confusion makes the soul experience happiness and distress. His perception of friends, neutral parties, and enemies, and the whole material life he builds around this perception are simply created out of ignorance. My dear Uddhava, fixing your intelligence on me, you should thus completely control the mind. This is the essence of the science of yoga. Anyone who listens to or recites to others the song of the sannyasi, which presents scientific knowledge of the absolute, and who thus meditates upon it with full attention, will never again be overwhelmed by the dualities of material happiness and distress.
So he meditated, then he took sannyas, and then he tried, started to travel?
Yeah. He left home taking sannyas and began to travel. Think you should travel first before leaving home? Or? I mean, if he's a turtle, then he can do that. He just takes his home with him. Yeah, that's the thing. If a turtle takes sannyas, do they have to give up their shell, or you know, how does this work?
They're
Kshetra sannyas. Oh, yeah, they're Kshetra sannyas, and they can move. Yeah. Wow, well, that works out pretty good.
Yeah, but their speed, you know, their Kshetra
sannyas
is pretty limited.
Yeah, it's not going anywhere too quickly, right?
Advanced.
Sannyas has four divisions: Kutichaka, Bodhaka, and then Pariyojakacharya. So the first two, like, they stay in the house.
I'm not catching the connection here. I mean, that is, yes, within, it is discussed, but here it says, he left home, taking sannyas, and began to travel about the earth.
So they stay in a kutir, and prasadam is sent to them. The first one, the Kutichak. And then in the third, Parivajakacharya, he is moving around. So I think he is now becoming Parivajakacharya. That's why it's mentioning that left home and gone.
And you know some Kutichaks or Bahuduks?
Traditionally, that's red. Yes.
The point is correct. But how does that apply to this discussion? Because if we want to apply something, why would we be discussing that? We'd be discussing how to, the mind can always be meditating on these six causes are not the cause of our unhappiness. It's the mind due to our false identification with, you know, as the controller and enjoyer. And therefore, that activates the modes, gives us a body, places us here, and all those kind of things. That would be the natural conclusion of this chapter, not how come he didn't do Kutichak and Bahuduk, especially since, yeah, basically in here, it was more the chuck than the Kuti. The Kuti chucked him out. So that was the Kutichak. So he already did that part. And as we saw here, some people before mentioned that he was a great duck, so that already covered the bahu duck part. Right? So now, he's just focusing on Parivajakacharya. Are we good? Thank you. Yes.
I've never heard it explained like that.
It's 11th canto. Come on. The Avanti Four Brahman. Come on.
That's the conclusion we came to.
Yeah, come on. Now, every sannyas ceremony, they all drag out the book and, you know.
Yeah.
Like that. Okay. Yeah, so. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The method of tolerating dualities is summarized. Controlling the mind is the essence of yoga. Though one cannot control the mind, one attains that result by hearing, reciting, or meditating on this song. Even if you can't, you just hear with faith, you know, or recite it or meditate. In any case, it will have that effect. The point is if we're interested, then Krishna will arrange. If we're not interested, then it'll, you know, pass by. And then sometime later, we'll come up again. You know? Just make sure you name your kids Narayan or something. Yeah. No?
Yeah, yes. I mean, it worked for
yeah, it worked. It worked. Of course, yes. Conclusion. By fixing the intelligence on the Lord, one should completely control the mind. This is the essence of the science of yoga. No other force besides his own mental confusion makes the soul experience happiness and distress. Neither moral persons, the demigods, the soul, the ruling planets, the reactions of work, nor time, or that guy over there, are the causes of one's happiness and distress. Right?
Thank you very much.
Yes. Had to throw in that guy. Rather, the mind alone is the cause. Because it is the mind that makes the spirit soul wander in the cycle of material life. And in this, it's your mind, not his mind. It is the mind. His mind. Yeah.
His mind causes my mind.
Yes, but the point, the point is it's got to be, it's our own mind.
It's like the beat the mind with a shoe and a stick. It's your own mind, not someone
else's
mind. You should be beating.
No, the other day you said, we are the 100% cause of our own stuff.
Yeah. That is. I said, it's not someone else, because we're always looking that someone else will get the blame. But we tried. We had six very, compelling, you know, situations, but it didn't pan out. Yeah. Rather, the mind alone is their cause, because it is the mind that makes the spirit soul wander in the cycle of material life. The real purpose of all charity, religiosity, and so forth is to bring the mind under control. The person who has already composed his mind in meditation has no need for these other processes, right? Remember, Krishna is mentioning that you, according to your position, you apply the rules, right? So this is all given so that we know what's the range. Then we situate ourselves. But if you don't know what the upper is, you're not going to try for it. Right? Yeah. And for a person who is incapable of fixing his mind, they are of no practical use. The false conception of material ego binds the transcendental soul to material sense objects. It's because from that, then the mind then is going to choose the material sense objects.
Yeah.
If you have materialistic identity, it will choose materialistic sense objects. You identify as servant of Krishna, it will choose service to Krishna. The Avanti Brahmana therefore became determined to bring himself over the insurmountable ocean of material existence by rendering service to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, Mukunda, with the same perfect faith in the Lord exhibited by the great devotees of the past. Only when one can focus his intelligence on the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead can the mind be completely subdued. This is the essence of all practical prescriptions for spiritual advancement.
So this conclusion, where is this from? Is this from the Bhagavatam, or is it Pandava came up with it?
It's always taken from the purports or the verses and that. And sometimes, because many will be saying the same, he'll paraphrase them together, or sometimes they're quoted exactly as they are. So, either way, yes.
So this is the process of the Jnana Sadhana? Jnana Sadhana?
Yes.
Shravana, Manana, and Nidhyasana. Because Nidhyasana is translated by Jiva Goswami as the worship of Lord.
Yes.
So at Manana, we contemplate, like many times we contemplate, okay, it's because of me something is happening. But that doesn't lead to then the conclusion that we want to write
yes.
to the Lord.
Yes, 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 yes.
So yes. that's why this is a complete process. And
yes, very good. Very good. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so by the contemplation in connection with applying it to Krishna, then it ends up as devotional service. You get the realization that you get fixed in devotional service. Mm-hmm. So otherwise, it's just there, you're practicing. But becoming fixed, then that's the what you're trying to get.
Then you get that higher taste and become
yes.
attached.
Yes, and then you move forward, but it's a thing of the past.
And just to mention, the Shravana is done only after accepting a guru from bona fide. So first you hear you should be bona fide to contemplate, not just hear anything.
Okay, else. Otherwise it doesn't get the real needed yasana.
So both for jnana sadhana bhakti and bhakti sadhana, both the prerequisite is accepting a bona fide spiritual master.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you see here, all the way through, he's always connecting the jnana, path of jnana and the path of bhakti, because up to liberation, they're following the same thing. It's just that the bhakti continues beyond while jnana doesn't. So neither of them are engaged in karma, because that will keep you within the world.
It said that who chooses jnana sadhana and who chooses bhakti is one who is predominated by druchi, the taste for Lord, then he goes to bhakti sadhana. One who is not, then he chooses
to... The jnana sadhana, yeah. And if neither of those, then you pick the...
It's karma also.
Karma sadhana. Means, but it's karma yoga, it's devotional service, but it's about the activities. Yeah. But once you get a taste, then the other two aren't necessary. That's what it says. Once you get to there, then those are given to the Lord, and one just absorbs himself. Right? Because that's the purpose of it. All those things, the purpose to get you to... control the mind, fix it on Krishna. And if that's already accomplished, then there's no need for that. Mm-hmm. Right? Unless they're doing something, you know, some service or setting example or like that. Mm-hmm. Otherwise. No?
Maharaj, you think that karma yoga, the focus is on activity. Jnana sadhana focuses on knowledge. And bhakti sadhana?
I'm telling. Or he's telling. I was telling. So he wasn't telling. Okay. So when he says it, it's okay. When I say it, then we get in trouble. Then the doubts come. Okay. What was the question?
What is bhakti sadhana?
What is bhakti sadhana? He was talking about that. See, because when we practice buddhi yoga, right? So in buddhi yoga, that means the activities, the mind, and the intelligence are engaged in the Lord's service, right? So to start the whole process, then you have to hear from a bona fide spiritual master. Otherwise, the Upanishadic process of Shravana Mana Nididhyasana actually doesn't start. It means you can say it's happening in its mechanical form, but it doesn't, because Nididhyasana actually means that realization of service to Krishna. Right? But otherwise, in a mundane subject matter, you contemplate it, and apply it. Then with time you get realization in that, and so then you become, you know, expert in that area. You have realization, you value it. But it doesn't, it keeps you in the material world. So actual Nididhyasana, just like actual liberation, means getting out of the material world. Right? Because all the words are originally connected with Brahman. So they must be seen in connection with Brahman. So Nididhyasana means realization of Brahman. You know, it means of the Lord. But if it's just realization of material subject matter, that's not the actual meaning. It can be used that way. That's an ordinary usage, but its original meaning is in connection with the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, depending upon your level, you're engaging, you know, in more activities and you know, some knowledge and some absorption, meditation on the Lord, or there's less activities, more knowledge, and then some absorption, or there's those who are absorbed in the Lord. So to be on that platform, by this definition, then it means when you have ruchi, or taste, then you're naturally absorbed. You know, but if you're having to use the intellectual process to keep yourself nicely fixed in devotional service, then we're working within karma and jnana. You understand? Like that. We don't have, in other words, we're practicing Vaidhi sadhana bhakti. And that other that he's talking about, that's rag sadhana bhakti. Because there's taste. Does that make sense? Chapter 24, the philosophy of Shankya. Pratigya. By understanding the science of Shankya, which has been perfectly established by ancient authorities, a person can immediately give up the illusion of material duality. Adhyaya Prakashika. In the 24th chapter, the elements from which the universe evolves and into which it dissolves are described. Right? So then, it's described a little something in the Gita, and then Kapila Gita gets into this a lot, and then now we see here in the Uddhava Gita, again it's being said. Lord Krishna gives instructions how bewilderment of the mind can be dispelled by the science of Shankya. Herein, the Supreme Lord again imparts to Uddhava instructions about the analysis of material nature. By assimilating this knowledge, the spirit soul can drive away his confusion based on false dualities. In the beginning of creation, the seer and seen are one and indistinguishable. The supreme absolute truth, one without a second and inaccessible to words and mind, then separates into two, the seer, which means consciousness or personality, and the seen, which means substance or nature. The material nature, which comprises the three modes of matter, is agitated by the controlling male factor. The Mahatattva then becomes manifest together with the energies of consciousness and activity. From these come the principle of false ego in its three aspects of goodness, passion, and ignorance. From false ego in the mode of ignorance arise 15 subtle forms of sense perception, followed by the 15 physical elements. From false ego in the mode of passion come the 10 senses. And from false ego in the mode of goodness come the mind and the 11 demigods who preside over the senses. By the conglomeration of all these elements grow the universal egg, in the midst of which the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as the creating Lord of the universe, takes up residence in the role of indwelling supersoul. From the navel of this ultimate creator comes the lotus upon which Brahma takes birth. Lord Brahma, invested with the mode of passion, executes austerities by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and on the strength of these penances he is able to create all the planets of the universe. The region of heaven is meant for the demigods, that of inner space for ghosts and spirits, and that of the earth for human beings and others. In the region above these three planetary systems are the places of advanced sages, and in the lower worlds are those of demons. Naga serpents, and so forth. The goals achieved by activities based on the three modes of material nature are all within the three mortal worlds. The destinations of yoga, severe austerity, and the renounced order of life are the worlds known as Maharjana, Tapas, and Satya. The goal of devotional service to the Supreme Lord, on the other hand, is the lotus feet of the Personality of Godhead in his abode, Vaikuntha. This universe of material action and reaction is constituted under control of time and the three modes of material nature. Moreover, whatever exists in this universe is simply the product of the combination of material nature and her Lord. In the same way, that creation proceeds gradually from the one and supremely subtle to the multitudinous and very gross. The process of annihilation proceeds from the grossest to the subtlest manifestation of nature, leaving only the eternal spiritual substance, right? So once coming from spirit, comes down to the grossest, you know, down into the metaphysical and all that, the grossest, then it goes back the other way, so all that's left is Krishna. This ultimate soul remains situated within himself, alone and without end. The mind of a person who meditates on these ideas does not become bewildered by material dualities. This science of Shankya, narrated in alternating sequences of creation and annihilation, serves to cut off all doubts and bondage. And so that's because you're stepping back and looking at it, the bigger picture of it. So when you look at it from there, then things aren't as important as they are when you're right at ground zero. Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea of this analytical process. You step back and then you see it in a different light.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki.